His name is Dan Lobby. He's, of course, from Cleveland.com, joining us here on The Fan. Though, Dan, before we get into the Browns talk, did you make it out to watch your team, Kent State, win a couple games in the MAC tournament this week?
You know, I actually was unable to make it out, but I did follow along. I was actually a little surprised that that they got as far as they did. A little rough year for the Flashes, but, you know, they'll be back next year.
I mean, yeah, that's all it comes down to. The Ball State game was interesting, though. I found my way in the MAC championship game yesterday, watching it, and made it down to the Quicken Loans Arena. I thought it's just a hop, skip, and a jump over. But I know you had more Brown stuff to cover, and, I mean, one of the biggest days that we'll probably see up until training camp happened on Friday. My question to lead off, Dan, everyone on Twitter wants to give Sashi Brown credit. How much appropriated credit should we give the former GM?
Well, I think he deserves credit for acquiring all these assets and, going out and getting a ton of draft picks and making some trades to get a bunch of assets that John Dorsey was able to use and still, you know, maintain his first and second round picks. But at the same time, you know, a lot of what they were chasing in these trades were things that Sashi Brown and company didn't acquire through the draft. You know, he did trade out of a possibly historic top five back in 2016, including a potential franchise quarterback. He did trade out of number 12, where you could have gotten some help in the secondary and a guy like Malik Hooker, who obviously got hurt. We don't know exactly what he's going to be. Or, again, a quarterback in Deshaun Watson. So, I think Sashi Brown deserves credit for creating the assets that John Dorsey has been using. But at the same time, there's a little bit of tail chasing going on as well because, you know, had you used some of those picks, some of that money to maybe acquire some guys over the last few years, you wouldn't have needed to make some of these trades.
Yeah, I guess that's where I fall in the divide there because I think to myself, well, how hard is it first off to acquire cap space at this point when you're up to $177 million? Acquiring draft picks is easier than ever. Look at what Buffalo's done in the past 72 hours where now they have six picks in the first three rounds and, of course, the third one in the first round being from the Browns. I wonder how much we should actually give them, but with John Dorsey, are these moves that Sashi Brown never would have made or do you feel like he would have eventually got there?
You know, I do think he was planning to use, I do think he was focusing on 2018. I do think he was planning to kind of use a lot of these picks. Obviously, things worked out that they were going to have two top five picks this year. It worked out that they have the first two picks in the second round. So I think Sashi Brown would have been more aggressive this year. I don't think they would have been kicking the can down the road quite as much. I think they were going to take a quarterback either way, no matter who was in charge. So I do think that's necessary to point out that I don't think it was going to continue to be looking to the future. I think this was going to be an aggressive year for them. But again, you know, you look at the fact that he had 24 draft picks in those first 2 years and you still have all these holes you're trying to fill.
Tyrod Taylor, arguably the best Browns quarterback since Derek Anderson back in 2009. Obviously a bridge for right now. What do you think the thinking here is? Do you think maybe Hugh Jackson thinks he can turn him into something more? Or is it just that, a one-year deal, we're going to go and see what happens and take a quarterback at number one?
I think it's absolutely a let's see what happens here with Tyrod Taylor. I like Taylor. I think he's a good quarterback. I think that, he's going to create some frustration too. He's obviously a guy that won games in Buffalo, was part of Buffalo's first playoff team in forever. And they went and traded him. So, you know, quarterback, as we know here, is at a premium, and the Bills had a guy who won games for them and were still willing to trade him and move on from him. So, you know, I think that tells you a little bit about Taylor. He's a good quarterback. You can win with him, but I think there's a ceiling about what you can accomplish. And having Taylor doesn't mean that they're not going to take a quarterback at number one or number four. I still think that's the plan. I still think he's a bridge. That doesn't mean he can't play his way into the discussion beyond this year, but I think right now he's a bridge.
Joined by Dan Lobby of Cleveland.com here on 92.3 The Fan. So DeShone Kizer, that era comes to an end. I don't know what to make of it as far as for what we believe Hugh Jackson's affinity for DeShone Kizer really was at the end of the day. Is this just a John Dorsey exclusive move, or do you feel like Hugh Jackson had a part in this as well?
Well, I think Jackson was ready to move on from Kizer. Maybe not completely cut ties with him like they did. But the bottom line is if you're going to bring in a bridge quarterback, obviously it was Taylor, but even if it would have been someone else, you're going to draft a quarterback. That pushes DeShone Kizer all the way down to number three. Or, maybe he's your backup for a few weeks while you keep a rookie, at number three for a little while. The future for DeShone Kizer just wasn't there. And I think the Browns did him a favor, kind of getting him out of here, giving him a new start, giving him an opportunity to sit behind Aaron Rodgers. he was put in an unfair position. Now, I do think Hugh Jackson liked DeShone Kizer. I also know that Hugh Jackson tends to speak in hyperbole about some of these quarterbacks. I don't know if he was as convinced about Kizer as he let on throughout the season when he talked about him. And frankly, even on the record, he kind of changed his tune on Kizer as the season went along. So, you know, I think this was the best for both parties. I think there was a world where Kizer could have existed here, but it was pretty clear that he wasn't going to be the future.
I love how you put that, just how he speaks in hyperbole, because I think of Hugh Jackson, and I always have to remind myself, actions speak louder than words. You know, Kizer got benched three times. Now he ultimately got traded. I can't look back on the DeShone Kizer era and honestly believe that Hugh Jackson just loved him.
Yeah, and you know, in Kizer's defense, I think he got put in an unfair position. He shouldn't have been starting from week one. Some of that was on the front office for creating a quarterback room that they did that didn't really give them options. Some of it was on Hugh Jackson for kind of forcing him to start from week one and then pulling him in and out of the lineup. It was just a messy situation all around. And like I said, I think it's best for DeShone. Now, I hope he does well in Green Bay, get some opportunities there. But I think it's best for him to go somewhere where he's not going to be the center of attention. He's not going to be viewed as the savior.
I think that's what makes me so happy about this, though, is that we won't have to watch the same movie we watched last year, because I imagine Tyrod Taylor at any point in this year won't be getting benched. I imagine he'll get his full season, and we won't see whoever they take at number one overall or number four, whatever they do with the quarterback spot, being rushed into a similar situation that DeShone got.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Tyrod. He doesn't really turn the ball over a lot. And that was something that really grated on Hugh Jackson with DeShone Kizer. That was one of those things that he just couldn't live with Kizer. So even if Taylor struggles a little bit, even if he has some of those games where, you know, he has 120 yards passing, 150 yards passing, and you kind of come away not blown away by it, at least you know he's going to protect the football. He's going to be durable. He's going to give your team a chance to win. He's not going to put you in bad position. So it's going to be hard for Hugh Jackson to really get into this groove of pulling him in and out of the lineup like he did with Kizer.
Joined by Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com. I know you've done your research on Jarvis Landry, but I want to get guys that you know a lot about more than anything else, and one of them is Corey Coleman. What does this eventually mean for the former first-round pick who, you know, coming off the past 2 years where his catch rate is poor, drop passes left and right. Dorsey's got no ties to Coleman. Could this be the end of what we see with Corey Coleman, or do you think he'll make it to training camp?
You know, I think Corey Coleman should probably be a little bit nervous. I would imagine if a trade came along that they really liked, they would pull the trigger on that. But that being said, I do think there's still a place for Corey Coleman in this receiving core. I think they just want to see him show them a little bit more. They want to see him, you know, break some bigger plays, do some things after he catches the football, do some things in Todd Haley's offense. I mean, Todd Haley could probably work with a guy like Corey Coleman, which is kind of your hope. Maybe you move him inside every now and again. You can move him inside, you can move him outside. You can do some things with Corey Coleman. So I think Corey Coleman could remain on this roster. I think he certainly could make it to training camp. But that being said, I wouldn't be shocked if I got an alert on my phone tomorrow that, hey, Corey Coleman got traded. So I think Coleman should be very aware of what's going on around him. Show up to OTAs ready to go and prove to this team that he's ready to take a step.
Dan, you're a smarter football guy than I. What would that trade look like? Just ballpark. I know the market's not set entirely yet, but what do you think it would take for Corey Coleman for another team?
Boy, I'd be curious what teams would want to give up for him.
Right?
I think the Browns would probably want a pick on the first 2 days of the draft, so we're talking maybe round three at worst. But I don't know if teams are going to line up to give up a third rounder for a guy like Corey Coleman. I know there's some talent there, and I know he's shown some flashes, but he also hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's also, like you said, had an affinity for dropping passes. He hasn't really put up the kind of numbers you want to see or had the type of consistency you want to see from a guy. So that's sort of why I'm not sure that he will get traded. I don't know if there's going to be a match there unless the Browns just absolutely decide they don't want him around.
Duke Johnson's got one more year. He did very well out of the slot and the receiving game last year. Does that just, with the addition of Jarvis Landry, does that just null and void everything that Duke will do? And does that have us reassessing what he'll be with the team past 2018?
You know, to me, I don't think it really impacts Duke Johnson all that much. I understand that he did play in the slot last year a lot. And he actually did enjoy doing that. But you know, look, I think you can put Duke Johnson in the backfield. Even as the year went along, they used him out of the backfield a lot more. He's going to have a lot of opportunities to be a playmaker. He's going to have a lot of opportunities to continue to do what he's been doing for this team. I know they still love Duke Johnson. So I wouldn't be nervous about Duke Johnson. I wouldn't be nervous about him getting moved anywhere. I think he's a guy that's still in this team's plans. And if it were up to me, I'd start talking an extension with Duke Johnson as he enters into that final year.
He's just a playmaker. I just love everything about Duke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Joined by Cleveland.com's Dan Lobby. Okay, no A.J. McCarron, obviously. Were you surprised when the carousel stopped spinning that we ended up without the Bengals quarterback on this roster?
I thought it was going that way. I really did. Hugh Jackson really loved him, some A.J. McCarron.
Right.
But, really, I think McCarron would have cost a lot of money. I think there was going to be competition for him. And I think what it really came down to is you were able to trade for a guy. Mm-hmm. That means he has to come to Cleveland. That doesn't mean he has a ton of options out there. With A.J. McCarron, you were going to be competing with teams that could offer him a front-loaded contract, probably like the Browns were going to offer. You're in competition with teams like, obviously the Jets aren't great, but it is still a New York team. It's a team that's building. Whoever strikes out on Kirk Cousins, they're going to go after A.J. McCarron and guys like that. So it kind of takes you out of this situation where you have to, over the next 3 or 4 days, really work to find your quarterback. Now you've got that settled, and I just think that was worth too much for the Browns to kind of sit and wait to see what happened with McCarron.
Dan, you've been extremely busy since Friday. I've loved the coverage you have at Cleveland.com. I appreciate all the work you do, and appreciate you hopping on for me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.